Glad it's Friday. Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. I really like Friday evening programs because I know that it means Saturday and Sunday are coming, right? Yeah, we're going to cover the this tragic story of this poor McCain volunteer, this Ashley Todd. Oh, my God. It's been raining and nasty and cold all day here in the Atlanta area, and I had to go out today to pick up some stuff at the grocery store, and I was walking from the car to the grocery store. It was cloudy and rainy and cold, and all of a sudden, the 6'4" black man attacked me.
Hello. Here we are. No, wait a minute. Something's wrong with my voice.
I don't know how much of that you heard. We had a little audio problem. I guess it's okay now. But I was out doing some shopping today at the grocery store, and I had to walk from the car to the front door of the store. And it was rainy and nasty out. And all of a sudden, a 6'4" black man jumped out of a manhole cover and grabbed me. And he said, I see you have a "War is not the answer" bumper sticker on your pickup truck. And I said, get your hand off my throat. And he said, you're going to take that off. And you're going to put a bumper sticker on that says, "War is the answer." Well, I managed to break free, but he carved a W in my cheek. I said, why are you putting Bushes? He says, that doesn't stand for Bush. That stands for war. I said, oh, okay. I'm going to report you to the police. He said, well, go ahead. Goodbye. And he took off. Kind of weird. Oh, don't forget, this Sunday at 8 a.m. Phoenix time, 11 a.m. Eastern time, our own engineer and sometimes co-producer Ian Huff will begin hosting Unreported News on KPHX 1480 and KNUV 1190, both in Phoenix, and be streaming over the Nova M web network. So tune in this Sunday. Here in the East, it'll be 11 a.m. In the West, 8 a.m. I was reading the Times this morning, and I had CNN on in the background. And I know Barack Obama is in Hawaii to be with his very ill grandmother. And I also knew that Michelle Obama was going to cover for him at a speech in Columbus, Ohio. So I had CNN on in the background. All of a sudden, I heard the announcer, Tony, whatever his name is, I forget, I'm sorry, saying, okay, let's join the rally in Columbus, Ohio. And I heard the applause, and I looked up, and there was Michelle Obama taking the stage. And I put down the Times, went and got a fresh cup of superbeans.com coffee. Yes, that's a plug, because it's the best damn coffee on earth. Filled up my coffee cup, sat down, and watched Michelle Obama and listened to what she was saying. And something must be wrong with me. Because I sat there, all of a sudden I had tears in my eyes. I don't mean I was sobbing or crying, but I had tears in my eyes. I'm looking at this woman, I'm listening to what she's saying, I'm listening to her talk about her husband and her girls and the love she feels for her family. And I'm looking at her, I'm thinking, my God, She is going to be the next first lady. Look at her. Look how graceful. Look how warm. Look how caring. Look how, listen to her words, how loving. And it was just one of those stupid, overwhelming moments. Now, I'm the first to admit that I used to be the person in the group at the Super Bowl viewing, you know, be over at somebody's house with 30 of us sitting around a television. And they would show one of those damn Kodak commercials, and I'd be the one sitting there with tears in my eyes. So it's not hard for me to well up, as they say. But, yeah, I kind of thought I was over that. So I'm watching Michelle Obama and listening to her. And find myself with big old alligator tears in my eyes. And it's just like, oh, my God. What's wrong with you? But then I started thinking, no, nothing's wrong. This woman is hitting every chord inside of me that I have. Love, caring, compassion, all, you know, all based around family, your kids, your spouse. The kind of talk that is just so reassuring. It's like you're... Maybe not your mother talking to you, but like someone that you have great, deep respect for. I don't know, whoever that is, in your family or your extended family or not. But all of a sudden you're listening to her and you're thinking, damn, this is, I feel secure. And the longer she talked, the more secure I felt. And it's the damnedest feeling. You know, they talk about Barack being kind of emotionless, you know, too cool for words, which he is. I think that's one of his cultivated survival mechanisms. I mean, he is who he is. He had to survive in this society. And Michelle Obama is entirely different, isn't she? She is just right there, right there. You may get a sense of remoteness with Barack. I do. I really do. I sometimes get a fit, and which I'm not, you know, I'm not criticizing that. That's probably a good thing. He holds himself back about 2 or 3 degrees in reserve, listening to what you're saying, watching what you're doing, thinking about what he's thinking about as you talk, you know, that sort of thing. He's not one of these candidates I've noticed that just shoots from the hip before the questioner gets the question out. You know, a lot of candidates do that to show you they're right there. Oh, I can answer this real quick. Obama doesn't do that. And he has a lot of hesitation in his answering. He says, you know, which is a clear indication to me that he's not just spouting out carefully rehearsed rhetoric. But it's also an indication that he does hold himself a bit in reserve. And again, that's cool. But I don't get that with, you know, when Barack Obama speaks, I get inspired, but it's on more of a political level. When I listen to Michelle Obama, it just makes me feel like I want to go home, you know, like I want to go somewhere and sit around with her and my sister and my mom and my friends. And I want to drink coffee and I want to listen to what she's got to say. And you know, if I'm lucky, I want Molly, my 4-year-old, to play with her kids. And it's just that warm kind of family feeling. I can't remember when I felt that way about a political spouse, whether it's husband or wife, doesn't matter to me. But usually it's the wife, you know, because usually it's the man that runs. But I can't remember when I've seen a female political figure, which is what Michelle Obama has become, talking where I just sit there and get tears in my eyes, tears that are tears of goodness. You know what I'm saying? Like that good feel, like watching the Kodak commercial where you go, oh, yeah, damn, yeah, I know. It's just...
I like Tipper.
I never got that feeling about Tipper.
I thought she was spunky.
Yeah, she was spunky.
Did you like Lady Bird?
I was too young for Lady Bird. Lady Bird, whatever I felt for Lady Bird, which wasn't anything. I mean, I was happy when she put up the highway beautification thing, but, you know, I just, her husband freaked me out. I mean, LBJ just totally freaked me out for his entire career. But anyway, that thing about Michelle Obama. Anybody else felt that? I mean, where you watch her, and when she smiles, I swear to God, she has one of the most loving, warm smiles that I have seen in a long time. I compare what I heard Michelle Obama saying today to what I've heard from the McCain camp for weeks. And if there's any doubt in anybody's mind about who is more emotionally prepared, psychologically prepared, intellectually prepared to run this country than Barack Obama, and whatever support comes from his wife, I mean, you people should lay down quietly until the ambulance arrives, because Michelle and Barack Obama, to me, are this country. They are this country. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that. There's hope. Every time I turn on the TV, there's hope. Somebody's acting crazy, there's hope. You let it, it'll drive you crazy, there's hope. But I'm taking back my power today.
Standing up to the flying monkey right, it's more of Mike Malloy.
It's 21 past the hour. The McCain campaign, this little pissant Matt Drudge, who is nothing but his own particular type of whore, no offense to sex workers, and Fox News are the ones who pushed the story about this poor, mentally unbalanced woman who claimed that a black man had attacked her and carved a backwards B and on her face and taken the $60 and knocked her to the ground, telling her, "You are going to be a Barack supporter," whatever that means, continue to punch and kick her while threatening, "I'll teach you a lesson for being a McCain supporter." Can you imagine? Can you imagine a mugger who stops and takes time to lecture someone politically and scratch a bee into their face? You knew this was BS when you first heard it. We all did. Police interviewed Todd Wednesday night and again last night. They asked her to come back today, ostensibly to help police put together a sketch of the man. Instead, detectives began interviewing her, and then she finally said she just wanted to tell the truth. Police spokesman said it doesn't appear that anyone else put the woman up to the false report. Now, the vice president of Fox, I'm sure you all know all this stuff, John Moody, who's a Pittsburgh native, wrote that the incident's credibility was inextricably tied to the McCain campaign. He said, "If the incident turns out to be a hoax, Senator McCain's quest for the presidency is over, forever linked to race baiting." I think it's over anyway. The weird part of this story, a lot of America is just going to write it off as some crazy little broad who got carried away. And they don't realize that this is the kind of tactic that Karl Rove uses. This is the kind of tactic the Republicans use. McCain's communication director gave reporters this story before the facts were known and pushed it. John Verrilli, who is the news director for KDKA in Pittsburgh, said that McCain's Pennsylvania campaign communications director gave one of KDKA's reporters a detailed version of the attack that included a claim that the alleged attacker said, "You're with the McCain campaign? I'm going to teach you a lesson." Oh, for Christ's sake. Yeah, like, I'm a mugger, you're at the ATM, I come up and steal your money, and then I stop and say, "Wait, is that your car over there?" What car, Mr. Mugger? "That one, the blue one with the white thing on the..." Is that a McCain sticker? Yeah. Hold still a minute. Let me run and get my scratcher. Okay, now! Jesus H. Christ, these people are crazy. They're mad. So then McCain's communications director gives a story to Drudge, cues reporters in on inside information. Here's what you need to ask. Of course this came from the McCain camp. I don't know to what degree this poor, apparently mentally disturbed girl, what her involvement is. She just may be an some crazed kid who, I don't know, decided, well, I'm going to get my 15 minutes. I'm going to do it. Well, now she's in a heap of trouble. I think filing a false police report is that a misdemeanor or a felony? I don't know. I don't know. The communications director is a guy named Peter Feldman. It's just astonishing. But to people in the black community, it's like, hold your breath when the story first breaks. And black folk know that there's probably a 99.9% chance it's not true. And then hold your breath a little bit longer, because usually there was a time in this country when a story like this developed, there would be 3 black men lynched before the truth came out, 10 more beaten to a bloody pulp, 6 more hounded out of town. You know how this stuff works. You know how it works. Jesus Christ. Now, there are a couple of blog sites. Jonathan Martin at Politico.com, who reported the story as fact yesterday, and his headline said, "It's getting ugly out there. A McCain staffer was assaulted last night in Pittsburgh." He didn't say... He didn't say was allegedly assaulted. He stated it as fact. This guy, Jonathan Martin at Politico.com, then cites Matt Drudge as his source for this fact. And then today, when Jonathan Martin at Politico reported on the hoax, he started out by saying his headline was, "When it rains, it pours." And his next line, "Seems like McCain just can't catch a break." McCain can't catch a break? A woman wasn't beaten and mutilated by a black man, and that means McCain can't catch a break? But I'm not crazy, I'm just a little unwell. I know right now you can't tell, but stay a while and maybe then you'll see a different side of me. I'm not crazy, I'm just a little impaired. I know right now you don't care.
Subliminable messages for you to misunderestimate. It's Mike Malloy. He's commonsensical.
26 before the hour. Now, I'm going to give you an example here of how weird things are in this country. Over the past 24, 48 hours, we have heard nothing but this story about this... this woman who claimed that she was attacked by a black man. And finally found out that it's a hoax. But everybody's been talking about it, right? And there was no story there, except a little white girl, a young white woman, has a nervous breakdown and decides she has got to get her 30 minutes or her 15 minutes of fame, no matter what. She's got to have it. So she comes up with this story, probably with help from the McCain campaign to some degree. Somehow, I guess it'll come out. So we all know about this story now. Right? We all know that it was a lie. And we know that... the woman is disturbed. All right, let's shift the scene now from Pittsburgh to Paris, Texas. Here's a story you haven't heard about. This is from about 10 days ago, 12 days ago. Let me share it with you as it was reported in the Chicago Tribune. When the mutilated and partially dismembered body of Brandon McClellan, a 24-year-old black man, turned up lying in the middle of a rural East Texas road one morning. The police immediately pronounced the case hit and run by an unknown driver. Within a few days, however, suspicions turned toward two white friends who had picked up McClellan in their truck a few hours before he was found dead. Despite signs that the truck had been washed, authorities discovered blood and other physical evidence on the undercarriage and arrested the two white men, both with long criminal histories. Now, this small, racially divided town, already seared with a racist label by civil rights groups last year over differences in how blacks and whites were treated by the local justice system, this town is on edge yet again, wondering if it has a horrific new hate crime on its hands. The district attorney in Paris, Texas, insists that race had nothing to do with McClellan's death. But McClellan's relatives and Paris civil rights leaders are less certain, citing the violence done to McClellan's body and reports that one of the accused assailants, a guy named Shannon Finley, had white supremacist ties. They are demanding that Paris authorities investigate the case as a possible hate crime akin to the infamous 1998 lynching of James Byrd Jr. in Jasper, Texas. You remember Byrd was dragged to his death behind a pickup truck by three white men who were later convicted of murder. McClellan, this latest victim, was walking in front of the pickup truck when Finley, the white guy, and a friend, another white guy, who was also arrested, allegedly ran him down and then dragged him 40 feet along the road until his mutilated body popped out from beneath the chassis. That's according to a police affidavit accompanying the warrant for Finley's arrest. Brenda Cherry, a local activist working with McClellan's family, said, quote, if you take somebody out to the country like that in the middle of the night and do that to him in that way, that's how they do black people around here. To me, it smells like what happened in Jasper. End quote. Paris, Texas race relations came under withering national scrutiny last year after the Tribune reported the case of Shaquanda Cotton, a 14-year-old African-American girl who was sentenced by a local judge to up to 7 years in prison for shoving a hall monitor at her high school. 3 months earlier, the same judge had sentenced another 14-year-old girl, only this one was white, to probation after convicting her of the more serious crime of arson for burning down her family's home. The discrepancy in the treatment of these two teenagers provoked protests from national civil rights groups and led to Shaquanda Cotton's early release from prison. Now McClellan's family fears that Paris, Texas officials, eager to protect the city of 26,000 from another round of negative publicity over race relations, that officials are purposely downplaying the racial overtones in McClellan's murder. Jacqueline McClellan, Brandon's mother, said, quote, at the crime scene, it looked like these boys went back and poured beer on my son's body. Two beer cans were lying out there, but the police didn't even pick them up. They just left evidence out there. They won't even consider the racial issues. That's the way it is in Paris. End quote. Family members and other critics are also concerned about the impartiality of Lamar County District Attorney Gary Young, who 5 years before, 5 years ago, before he was elected county prosecutor, served as Finley, that's one of the white guys, court-appointed defense attorney when Finley pled guilty to manslaughter for shooting a friend to death. One of the white boys who's now accused of killing the black guy. Although the victim in white guy Finley's 2003 manslaughter case was white, race played a role in the incident. When Finley was busted for the murder 5 years ago, he told police he was sitting in a pickup truck with his friend, the one he shot dead, in a park, when two gun-wielding black men walked up alongside and tried to rob him. Finley said he grabbed his friend's handgun and fired at the robbers, but, oh, damn, instead he killed his friend. An autopsy determined that the victim suffered 3 gunshot wounds to the head. Oops, sorry, oops, sorry, oops, sorry. God damn, I'm having a hell of a time shooting them Negroes. Oops, move your head. Oh, you're dead. Oh, well, damn. Although the victim... No, I just said that. An autopsy determined the victim suffered 3 gunshot wounds to the head, but the district attorney at the time accepted white guy Finley's contention that the shooting was an accident and offered him a plea bargain on a reduced manslaughter charge. So Finley went to jail, served 3 years of a 4-year prison sentence. Oh, and the Negro robbers? Oh, my goodness, they were never found. I wonder why. Maybe they're related to the black guy in Pittsburgh who car... Oh, never mind. McClellan's relatives say that they have heard that Finley fell in with white supremacists while he spent his 3 years in prison. And that he had gotten upset over Brandon McClellan, the black guy's overtures to a white girl. Factors they say the police ought to investigate. Irvin Berry, a friend of now-dead McClellan, said, quote, I always told Brandon that Finley was bad news and he should stay away from him. But Brandon thought they were good friends. End quote. Now, you haven't heard about that story, have you, Truth Seeker? Okay, I know some of you have. I didn't hear about it. Didn't hear a thing about it. But I could not get away from the story of the 20-year-old white girl in Pittsburgh today. I couldn't get away from it. What does that tell you? Oh, come on. Jesus, God. We all know what that says. The value of a black life in this country still is what? 1/10th? 1/20th? 1/50th? Of some gibbering little white girl who is determined to get on YouTube or Facebook or on the 10 o'clock local news or CNN, MSNBC, Fox, ABC, CBS, NBC. Well, she made it, didn't she? She got there. But what about Brandon McClellan, who it appears was run over and dragged until his body came apart by a couple of white boys, one of whom had shot and killed a friend 5 years ago and then claimed, well, oh, damn, you know what? We were just sitting here in the car drinking beer, and these two Negroes came up, you know, and they had guns. They were going to rob us, and so I grabbed my partner's gun there and tried to shoot them Negroes. But you know what? Damn, my buddy's head kept getting in the way. Son of a bitch, I shot him 3 times, but, you know, I was just trying to get them Negroes. I wasn't trying to kill my buddy. Had I been born a black man in America, I never would have made it to, I don't know, 25, 20, 18. I would have wound up in prison or in a mental institution or dead. One of the things that has never failed to impress me one way or the other is how black folk in this country have managed to get over all these centuries. How they've managed to do it. It's amazing. To the other side. 41 shots cut through the night. You're kneeling over his body in the vestibule, praying for his life. Well, is it a gun? Is it a knife? Is it a wallet? This is your life. It ain't no secret. Yeah.
coexist peacefully. It's more of Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Oh, by the way, just a little teaser for you. If this has nothing to do with what we've been talking about here for this part of the program, but if you want to come to a complete understanding as to why John McCain picked Sarah Palin, there is what is being described as a devastating article in this Sunday's New York Times Magazine by writer Robert Draper. It's called "The Making and Remaking of McCain." Somebody sent me a couple of excerpts from this thing, and whoa. So, if you don't subscribe to the Times, I don't know, man. You know, find out somehow to get the New York Times Sunday Magazine section. I know a lot of you are way ahead of me on this. You already know why McCain picked Palin, but... Got an email here from Prairie 2 who says the reason the Obamas are such so attractive because they're inspiring. Let me start over. The Obamas are such inspiring speakers because you can tell they actually understand the concepts they're talking about. And you can believe that since what they are saying makes sense to them, that they might actually be telling you the truth. Which is an unnatural feeling that requires an exorcism if you're a right winger. that's part of it. Maybe that's part of the reason I get tears in my eyes. Aside from the fact that she makes me feel like I've got a home or a family somewhere, aside from Kathy and Molly, that I've got a home place, which I don't. I don't know why that's. A family home place. This is my home place where I live with my wife and my child. But you know what I'm talking about. I haven't had a home place, so to speak, in 40 years. And when I listen to her, not so much Barack Obama, but when I listen to Michelle, I get that feeling. There's a home place. There's some place, hey, Kathy, we're going to go home for Thanksgiving. you know that feeling. You know what I'm talking about. But... maybe it's not that. Maybe it's what Prairie 2 says. Maybe it's just a sense of profound relief that I'm hearing someone who is enmeshed in the presidential election, who is going to wind up in the White House one way or the other, telling me the truth. Telling me the truth. Now, maybe she's only telling me the truth about the feeling she has for her family and how dedicated her husband is. But Jesus Christ, I'll take it. I'll take that. Give me more. A political person standing there telling me the truth. Not saying anything that she's going to have to go back and correct, unless some freakish jerk-ass tries to make her, like when she said for the first time in her life she felt proud to be an American. Well, hell yes! For the first time in my life, I hear a person who is unless they really steal it, is going to be the next first lady, say something that to me connects to something inside of me that I can't even name. I call it, oh, going home for Thanksgiving. No, it's so much bigger than that. I don't know what it is. But I've never felt like, listening to any of these political people or their spouses, I've never felt like, well, damn, I could see these people as part of my family. I want to be part of their family. I want to hang out with them. No, this is not like having a beer with George Bush. No, it's not that at all. It's a deep, some kind of connection. I don't know these people from Adam's house cat, but I've been listening to Barack Obama for months now. You know who first turned me on to him was Nancy Skinner. Remember that, Kathy? Back when Nancy was running against him for the Senate seat from Illinois that he won. Nancy was, at one point, there were like six or seven Democrats running in Illinois in the primary, the Democratic primary in Illinois. And even though Brock won, you know, Skinner told me several times, Nancy Skinner told me several times, she said, when this guy talks, it's amazing. So I've been listening to Barack Obama for a long time. And yeah, I connect to what he's saying. And again, if for no other reason, I know he's not a liberal. I know he's got corporate connections. I know. But I also know that there is an honesty about him. And it's not the Bill Clinton honesty. That was a con job. There's a real honesty with this guy that is very, very appealing. But his wife has the ability, apparently, I didn't know this, but she has the ability to stand someplace in Columbus, Ohio with a TV camera on her and start talking about this and that and other things and smile occasionally. And that little line between her eyebrows disappears. When that line between her eyes, you know who else had that line? My mother. Now, I'm old enough to be Michelle's father, but my mother had that same line. When she smiles and that line goes away, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to talk about this next hour. I know I'm driving you all crazy, and I apologize. But when something like that happens to me, you know, I've got, you know, oh, man, I can't wait till the program starts tonight so I can get on the air and talk about this. As if anybody gave a damn, but it means something to me to see Michelle Obama on a television broadcast of her speech, and she's able to reach her arm out like that somehow and with her fingers grab hold of my heart and squeeze. That means something to me, Truth Seeker. Seven past the hour. This is Nova M Radio. My name is Mike Malloy. Oh, someone wants to talk about the Michelle Obama. All right, let's talk here with Laura, who's calling from Cresco, Iowa. Is that right? Listening on Sirius. Hey, Laura.
Hey there. How are you doing tonight?
I'm all right.
I feel very privileged to get on the show.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you're here.
But I've actually met Michelle here in Iowa. Of course, they were canvassing the entire state back in December, and she was at a little venue, and there was probably about 50 of us there. And I think, you know, I cried too. And just because she brings you into her family, she talked about her daughters very personally, and she talked about her husband. And you're right, she was very truthful. She talked about, you know, him leaving his dirty socks on the floor, and the reality of them going to college and paying back their college loans and her father with MS. And I think rather than just standing behind her man and saying, he's such a great guy and I love him so much, right. You know, she talked about their personal faults and the things that they've gone through that you can connect with. She connects much more than Barack does that way.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Maybe that's the feminist personality is so much more willing to expose that softer side, that real side. I mean, that's the side of all of us, of course, that's real. The, you know, the phony fake side is the side that says, get out here and compete, get out here and struggle to earn money, get out here and wage war, get out here. You know, that is such a... Men are I guess stuck with it because of the you know, our chemical makeup, whereas women can be fierce warriors too, but women do have that ability to just check out of that conversation altogether and start a new one and draw you in, and the new conversation has to do with life rather than death. I've noticed that about so many women, which is not to say that women also don't have the warrior aspect.
Right.
I, you know, I think about, like most of us do, I think about my mother, her ability to care for and sacrifice for her four children and be a loving mother, but at the same time, just be fierce if somebody...
Right, you better watch out when you cross mama.
That's right,
You know, and you know that you're in trouble when mom gets that little furrow in her brow, or, you know you're in trouble. Dad is quite kind of always on that steamroller straight ahead. But when mom's mad, you know you cross the line. And I think that you're right. You're absolutely right about that. And I tried to call last week, too, talking about my Obama signs. Everyone in town got stolen, all 110 of them.
Oh, yeah.
Got stolen out of our town, and you know what? I replaced them all, and I put up one of this little 86-year-old lady right in the beginning of town, put up a great big white sign. She had her son paint for her that said, "You can steal my sign, but you won't steal my vote."
Oh, wow. that's cool.
She is just the cutest, tiniest little thing you've ever seen. And let me tell you, she's pretty fierce, too, and she's the most loving, cookie-baking woman you'd ever known, but you don't want to mess with her.
Yeah, especially if you're from outside the family, if you cross that line and, you know, mom feels that you're a threat, God help you. So, but at the same time, there is the, along with the warrior aspect, there's also that nurturing, life-giving aspect that men just by, you know, they say anatomy is destiny. That's a lot truer than the people who first coined that phrase. They were trying to say, I think, that female anatomy is destiny for females, and it holds them back. But the inverse of that is even more true, that the males are kind of trapped in our anatomy the same way. And it's a damn shame. I think that's one of the struggles that a lot of men go through for most of their lives, how to connect to the feminine aspect.
Getting in trouble for
And it's in there. The feminine aspect is there. The yin energy is there if we can connect to it. So anyway.
Right. Well, you're very, very right.
I'm glad somebody else feels the same way about Michelle Obama. Thanks.
She's incredible. She's incredible. I told her I would vote for her in a second night after hearing her speak.
Absolutely. In half a second. I appreciate it. Thanks, Laura.
Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. Yeah. I hope that the Obama family is completely, protected. Completely protected. Any way you want to imagine that, what that protection consists of, whatever. I got this email. I got to share this with you. It'll just take a minute. Today is this person's 50th birthday. And he writes, "I'm old enough to remember the nutball evangelicals came out against the TV show Bewitched because they said it promoted Satan worshiping. I'm old enough to remember the public used to rise up and collectively laugh at them. Now it seems the public would say, well, they have a point. I'm old enough to remember when the idea of a bowl of cereal and Saturday morning cartoons was a new thing. Now I know our generation got lots of grain and milk laced with strontium-90 from the nuclear tests of the 50s that sent its fallout over the dairy states in America's breadbasket. Now our generation is the one that's dying of bone and breast cancer as well as leukemia. I'm old enough to remember when everybody smoked. I'm old enough to remember when guys put oil in their hair and then wore a hat in public. Women's hair was like a helmet and hard as a rock. I'm old enough to remember when new cars still had metal dashboards, and when you opened the glove box, there were two circles molded on the inside to hold your drinks at the drive-in or from the car hop. I'm old enough to remember Tinkerbell using a wand over a castle to introduce the wonderful world of Disney on our new color TV, back before Disney promoted politicians who want America to go back to the days of black and white TV. I'm old enough to remember green army men were fighting gray army men led by a Nazi looking through binoculars. He's talking about the toys. I'm old enough to remember our school taking us on a tour of our local dairy and buying milk in school with the occasional buffalo head nickel. I'm old enough to dream of going into space, and I remembered the man who was going to make it happen being gunned down. I'm old enough to remember watching bullfights from Mexico on TV. I'm old enough to remember when the original Star Trek was airing new episodes and believing humanity was ready to work together. And I'm old enough to remember thinking or wondering if I was going to be alive in 10 years thanks to push-button war. And I'm old enough to remember when the United Nations was going to bring peace in our time. Now, the guy who wrote that is Spitfire, who you've heard on this program before, calling from Anaheim, California. So you turned 50, huh?
Yes.
Well, you're just a sprout.
Oh, yeah.
You're just a youngster. Oh, my God. You know, 50 is the new 25. You know that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I don't feel 50.
You don't sound like it either. You know, the stuff you sent me in the email, you know, to me that was just, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, all that stuff.
Yeah, I could picture that. You know, I was thinking a good gift for you.
Yeah?
Would be the TV series, what was it? I'll send Kathy a link. It was a TV series that was about cops.
About cop. Oh,
yeah. It was done in the 70s, but it was supposed to take place in the...
Dragnet.
And it was supposed to take place in the early 60s.
You're talking about...
It had a very 50s feel to it.
You're talking about Dragnet.
Oh, no.
Joe Friday, Badge 714.
No, this was a different show.
Adam 12.
I'll send Kathy the link, though.
Adam 12.
Uh-huh. No, those were shows when I was in my teens. Well, early teens.
I used to like Adam 12, that program, because there was Officer Malloy. Hold on a second. I got to do a break, and I'll come back and give you another minute, all right?
All right.
I guess it is your birthday, Spitfire.
Oh.
It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. All right, we were talking with Spitfire, who is celebrating his 50th birthday. Jesus, I have cheese in my refrigerator older than that.
Terrific.
But I guess 50. I remember 50. It was good.
Yeah, that show is called Crime Story.
Oh, I never heard of it.
So I'll send Kathy a link to a place where she can get you the DVD.
Oh, good.
it was a great show. And the thing that got me about it is that a while back you were reminiscing about how the 50s attitude. And even though this takes place in like the early 60s, they have the 50s attitude.
Yeah.
It'll really take you back.
All right.
But, thanks for the... Happy birthday.
All right, yes.
I just hit 34,699 posts in the forum.
In the MikeMalloy.com slash 34,000 times you have posted there. That's over what?
Coming up on 35,000. Probably before the election, it'll be 35,000.
That's over what? How long have I had that up? 10 years? 9 years?
Well, I think I got in there probably about 2 years into the Bush administration.
Oh, so along about...
About 6 years.
About 02. So you've been posting...
I've taken a couple of hiatuses, too.
Yeah.
Some of them for like 9 months.
35,000 posts at the message board at Molloy.com. Oh, my God. All right. Listen, Spitfire, happy birthday. Whatever you do, be careful. All right?
Oh, yeah.
All right, man. Take care.
I got my gun.
Well, that's not what I meant. But okay, be careful. And
yeah.
And happy birthday. Happy birthday. 50 years old. Just a kid. Christopher is calling from Atlanta, listening on Sirius. Christopher, welcome to the program.
Hi. I enjoy your show. I was just calling because I was listening to CNN. I flipped back and forth.
Uh-huh.
And they were talking about that young lady, Mrs. Todd, that made the erroneous police report.
Right, right.
And they were saying that, you know, it was a mistake and that she should be forgiven and we should just kind of brush it away. And it just goes to show that...
Well, wait, who is saying that?
It was on Anderson Cooper.
And one of his guests was saying it?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Well, probably a Republican operative, maybe somebody in the Bush... in the McCain-Palin camp, I don't think any rational human being could say, oh, well, yawn, let's forget about it. The poor girl made a mistake. No, the poor girl didn't make a mistake. This was calculated. You don't make a mistake by carving a B into your cheek. That's not a mistake. That's a calculated... Yeah, backwards B, because you're looking in the mirror and you're so damn stupid you don't understand that it's going to be backwards when you pull your face out of the mirror. That's not, you know, I disagree. This is a calculated move. And like I said earlier in the program, people have died. Black men have been lynched, murdered because of a false accusation from a white girl or a white woman. This has happened how many times in the past 350 years? A million?
Well, most recently, it happened in Georgia in the 1990s, the most recent one.
Refresh me on that one.
It happened, I believe, in South Georgia, in Bainbridge or Thomasville.
Yeah.
Guy just walking home, and he was lynched. They found him hanging in a tree. I want to say 1991. But then everyone seems to forget about the guy that was lynched in Texas a few years back.
Yeah, dragged behind the pickup truck, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just anything to stir up hate and just discord amongst the, I guess, the little people or the sheep is what they just seem to be looking for. And so many of us are sheep. We just follow along aimlessly. It doesn't take very much to get a mob going.
That's right. That's right. All right. Thanks, Christopher. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you for your time. You have a great show.
Okay. Thank you, sir. I appreciate you checking in. Let's when we come back, we've got, what is it, about 2.5 minutes? Rick Sanchez. Was that today? I've appeared on his program a couple times. I think I'm going to be on again November 3rd if we can... If CNN would ever get their act together, I might wind up as a permanent fixture on this program, but they want me to do it for free, and I'm not going to do it for free. So, I'll do an occasional guest shot with Rick. I like Rick. But I've got something from today where Sanchez is about 4 minutes that Kathy has edited down to about 2, where he's talking about this, which ought to synopsize and, put a cork in this. This whole story, the sad part is, horrifyingly sad part is, first of all, the young white woman is unbalanced. She's mentally ill and desperately needs some help. And I hope she gets it. I really hope she gets it. But the other thing, you don't play like that in this society. I don't care that it's 2008. It doesn't matter that we have a black man who's going to be president. You don't play with that. You don't say, you know, a 6'4" black man grabbed me and carved a B in my face. You don't do that. So I hope she gets her help. But I think everybody needs to know about this story and talk about it and realize what it means.
One in my country, 'tis of they to take swings at each other on talk show TV and work. Why don't you just go ahead and turn off the sun? 'Cause we'll never live long enough to undo everything they've done to you.
It's 25 before the hour. Bob sent me this. Are you aware of this? I didn't know this. We have the most expensive medical care in the world. I knew that. And the least effective. Get this. The average life expectancy for Americans, for a long time, it's been in the low 70s for men and upper 70s for women. So it comes as a shock to learn that the average life expectancy for Americans has dropped to 69.3 years, according to the America's Health Rankings Report, issued by the American Public Health Association's annual meeting. The figure is exceeded by 28 other countries, including Britain, France, and Germany. It's about 5 years less than the life expectancy in Japan. According to Dr. Reed Tuckson, who I guess is with this organization, the dismal number reflects increasing obesity, fewer people quitting smoking, and increasing numbers of people without health insurance. Officials made no mention of the increasing consumption of processed foods containing refined sweeteners, processed vegetable oil, and toxic additives, and certainly did not allow even a whisper about the almost complete absence of nutrient-dense foods such as organ meats, shellfish, butterfat, and eggs from grass-fed animals. All of that stuff is gone from the American diet. And it goes on, it goes on and on and on. But we're 29th now. 28 other countries have a greater life expectancy average for their citizens than we do. And I saw something about this report on one of the network news reports tonight, and it didn't get into the dietary stuff. It did touch on the smoking thing, of course, and the obesity thing. But what it said was the single most important factor in life expectancy is access to good health insurance. The single most important factor. Now, I don't know what they meant by that. Is it better to have good health insurance than to not smoke? I don't know. I just know what the reporter said, that overall, maybe they control for smoking or control for obesity or control for alcoholism or whatever, and then come up with the stat that the single most important element for extended life expectancy is access to health insurance. And you have people at these McCain Palin rallies applauding when McCain is saying, maybe they don't understand, but when he's saying that you know, the socialist wants to make government health care available, and they all applaud and say no, you know, nobody wants that, my friends. No, we don't want that. We want to stay all goddamn sick. We don't want health insurance. Hell no. We want your plan, John. $5,000 a year. God damn, you're going to give that to us. Well, my goodness, that'll pay for about 3 months worth of health. And really? And they keep applauding this freak. What kind of madness is that? Oh, my God. I listened to these rallies. I listened to what McCain, and especially the hoe from Wasilla, what she says. You know, I'm ready to write her off. She's not even funny anymore. It's not even worth parroting. But John McCain stands up there and tells these people to their faces, we don't want no redistribution of wealth, do we? And these dumb bastards cheer. And every single one of them in the audience would benefit by something like redistribution of wealth, even though that's not what Barack Obama's talking about. These people don't understand how well. Kathy and I had lunch today with a friend, Chuck Perry, down here in Atlanta. And we were talking about this. Chuck just got back from an extended trip to China. And it was very interesting. He was telling us a little bit about his travels. But what he was talking about was the mixed economy over there. Now, he wasn't touting communism. That's not where Chuck's at all. Chuck is a entrepreneur, businessman, liberal. I mean, a real liberal. He's not a DLC liberal. He's a real liberal or a DLC Democrat. But he was telling us about how what he learned there from the people he hung out with, the Chinese people he hung out with, and yada, 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 about how successful the Chinese people feel. Now, yeah, Tiananmen Square, okay. Yeah, try to challenge communism. They'll shoot your ass down in the street. Yeah, okay. Now, the economic system. Yeah, they put lead in their paint and send it to our kids and the toys. Yeah, I understand. But we're not talking about it from our perspective now. Just try to get away from the American-centric point of view. Let's see if we can shift around here to the Chinese-centric point of view. And the people in China, as Chuck was pointing out to us, are extremely content with what's going on. Their little form of free enterprise, laissez-faire capitalism, which is going to have some clamps put down on it eventually. But I don't know what spun me into that conversation I have with Chuck today, but here we are in this country where you have Americans. When's the last time you saw a bunch of Americans get together? Like Chuck was telling us, Chinese get together and have lunch, and everybody's happy. They're having a good time. You know, blah, 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 blah. Americans get together. Oh, God damn, what are we going to do? I don't know. What are we going to do? I have no idea. Well, this is awful. Well, and yet, the Americans will go out and vote to continue the policies that are hamstringing them. What is that? You know, Frank's book, What's the Matter with Kansas, it just didn't quite. I mean, yeah, he made a great effort to explain why people can be tricked into voting against their own best interest, economic interests. But over and over and over again, and I hear these crowds cheering when McCain mocks the idea of single-payer health care, like the system they have in France. Take another look at Michael Moore's movie, Sicko. Yeah, let's mock that. That's no good. Oh, hell no. We want to continue to get diseases and die. We want to not have access to health care. We don't want to go to a doctor. We want to wind up like George Bush said. Well, there's free medicine in this country. Go to an emergency room. Yeah, that's what we want. And people applaud that. I'm just picking a number out of the air, but I think it's valid. Maybe 85. Let's go with 80. First thought's the best thought. 80% of Americans would probably love a redistribution of wealth down from the top, from this goddamn trickle-down lie that was put on us back in 1980. By what's his name? Reagan's budget director. What was the guy's name? Stockman, David Stockman, who then wrote a book and said the whole thing was a scam. Absolute scam to make the wealthy wealthier. So here we are, 28 years later. Haven't you had enough? Jesus, God, haven't you had enough? Why don't we go ahead and do what is happening under a different name? Nationalize the banks. I mean, we're paying for it anyway now. Nationalize transportation. Nationalize national defense. Nationalize communications. Nationalize energy. take those great, big, overarching necessities and get them out of the hands of this disgusting, predatory, capitalist, free market lie. It's not true. Neoliberalism, Alan Greenspanism, look what it's done to us. Look what it's done to the world. We got to grow up. It's certainly not going to, I don't expect it to happen in my lifetime, but there has to, it's just a natural evolution, isn't it? I'm not talking about communism, where, you know, central planning. I'm not talking about central planning. I'm not talking about that style of market control. I'm talking about nationalization, nationalizing certain massive key industries that cannot be allowed to be tampered with by these gamblers, these casino operators who have utterly and absolutely destroyed. And the right wing wants you to believe that a few people who couldn't afford houses got phony loans. Jesus Christ. And a lot of people in this country now are believing, well, I'm not going to bail him out. He lied and got a bigger house than me. To hell with him. Let him suffer. I just read that home sales are up 5% last month. Was that what it is? Not new home sales. Now, what is that? What does that tell you? You know what those are? Those are the sale that results when somebody is foreclosed on and the house goes to auction. They don't tell you that. That 5.25% jump that they say, oh, well, that's the biggest jump in 5 years. You dumb asses on network news, why don't you finish the story and say the reason it went up 5.25% is because of the repossessed houses that are being resold.
Wars for his country and his king, of his honor and his glory, the people would sing.
Doing talk radio right. From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. All right, let's play this bit of sound from this is from CNN, from Rick Sanchez from his program today.
But by all means, the biggest story that we're following for you right now has to do with what turns out to be a hoax, a story that we here at CNN chose yesterday not to go with because it seemed like either A, an isolated incident, or B, and maybe both, an incident that needed to be really thoroughly vetted and checked out before it was reported by any news organization. Unfortunately, it was reported by several news organizations, and as a result, the story is now looking like it has to be turned around. It's about this young lady. Her name is Ashley Todd. She is 20 years old. You see that B there on her cheek. Her story is that yesterday, while she was at an ATM in Pittsburgh, she was taking out money when she was robbed by a, quote, big black man. 6'4", she said that he was. Apparently, that man, she went on to say, held her to the ground, attacked her, and then carved that B on her cheek. He says that she said to him, "You are going to be a Barack supporter." Pinned her to the ground and scratched the letter B on her right cheek, as you can see there. In a later account, she came on to say that she actually lost consciousness and wasn't quite sure how much money he had taken or when he had actually scarred her face. That's when police started to wonder whether her story was really going to check out. They had her take a polygraph, a lie detector exam. She failed the test. That's when police moved on. It is now being reported by police in Pittsburgh that the story was a lie. Prior to the police deciding that the story needed to be checked out, she had gotten reports Thursday and had prompted the calls from the Republican presidential candidate and his running mate, Sarah Palin, to call Todd to express their concern. Barack Obama's campaign had also called and issued a statement wishing Todd well and hoping the attacker would be swiftly brought to justice. again, part of the story is the fact that it was reported by the media. We would not be telling the story now had it not been carried by so many outlets. As I mentioned before, it was mentioned on, as a matter of fact, I have a list, not to mention names, but the initials of the news organizations are Fox News, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, and Newsday. Also, radio talk show hosts went on their radio stations and talked ad infinitum about this story yesterday.
Yeah, and what do you want to bet that those are right-wing talk show hosts? The one source of this lie that Rick leaves off is essentially the source that started it, and that was the little piece of human waste, Matt Drudge. The Drudge Report, he and McCain operative who pushed this story. The desperation here is just palpable. I mean, you can smell the stink coming from the McCain Palin roadshow. It's a stench of something that has, you know, like a dead rat. Have you ever found a rat? If we see a rat, when we go to the dump to shoot rats, and we figure we're you know, cutting back on disease potential for the rest of the country or the county anyway. The next a couple days later, if we go back to dump stuff into the dump, that stench of dead rats. You ever smelled that? Decaying rat flesh. It's pretty bad. That's the kind of stink that is coming from the McCain-Palin a campaign. Everything that they have talked about has been a lie. Every trumped-up charge. Have you noticed that coming from the McCain-Palin Express is just unending attacks on Barack Obama, all of which are based in lies and exaggerations, in distortion. The one that really sets my teeth on edge, he hangs out with terrorists. He pals around with terrorists. Jesus H. Christ. It's amazing. But every day, every single day. So that's what they were hoping for here. This is what they wanted. This poor, misguided, mentally ill 20-year-old girl who did this to herself. Oh, my God. Who actually has been so, and she's been a McCain volunteer, college Republicans, whatever the hell, whatever organization that got completely inside her head and just shook her until her brain cells got bruised and started to dribble out her ears and her nose and her mouth, and she has gone mad from working for McCain. It's understandable. Why would a 20-year-old have anything to do with the Republican Party? I've never been able to figure that one out. Unless they go to, you know, like Liberty University or Regent University, some of these fundamentalist right-wing non-university universities, you know, these Christianist organizations that turn out robots. But my God, how can a 20-year-old get involved with a death cult like John McCain and Sarah Palin? And come out of it with her mind intact. The quick answer, she can't. It can't be done. So here she is. Here she is. What a sad story on the one hand. But on the other, excuse me, every time a story like this turns up, black folk know that chances are some innocent man or two or six or ten are going to die. They're going to die because of the you know the mad ramblings of someone like this 20-year-old girl. They're going to die. So there's the McCain camp, waiting for this story to, as they say, get legs. And you know, the right-wing neo-Nazi machine in this country kicked into full gear. Everything from the little piglet Hannity to the big piglet Limbaugh to all the other little piglets who make up the noise machine in this country, border to border, coast to coast, 24/7, all this right-wing drivel. And they all pick up on it. Oh, yeah, looky here, looky here, looky here. Huh? What about this? Are they going to come back on the air now and say, oh, gee, we made a mistake? Damn them. You know, have I mentioned yet tonight how much I hate these people?
It's 7 past the hour. A couple of quick emails, then we're going to go to your phone calls. If you're not online, the number is 800-989-1480. Online, I mean on the phone line. Our bureau chief in Aurora, Illinois, sent me an email, Marianne. Hi, Mike. Yeah, I heard the story last night. She's talking about the 20-year-old woman. And the first thing that came to mind was that another deranged white girl who had the national attention years ago, Susan Smith, remember her? Oh, yeah, that happened right over here and not far from Atlanta. She had a story about how some black man hijacked her car with the two boys in the back seat. My reaction then, as last night, was, yeah, right, sure that happened. And this is exactly what the McCain campaign figures is their only chance. Confused, warped with hate, stumbling in ignorance. An army of lost souls who cannot begin to articulate their torment and sense of entrapment, much less the source of their rage. Sarah whips them up, and McCain reassures them. By the way, McCain picked Palin in a haze of anger. Okay, I'll give the base exactly what they want. He's lost all mooring, except for his rage, twanging that one remaining string in his campaign that still has a resonance out there. Sad, sad, sad. Maybe this was a good time for Obama to be off the stage for a couple of days with his sick grandma. And maybe most of the country will be ready in 10 days for a real human being to lead us and ready to get the racist monkey off our backs. Let's hope. Marianne. And regarding national health care, this person wrote in, no name. I'll just call this person FM. I enjoy your show and align my views closely with yours. I'm a nurse practitioner working in emergency care. My goal is to provide access to health care as well as education, although I agree with the basic universal health plan, which we more or less have already since we pay for it somehow. It really, really needs to address wellness and prevention and be rationed to some degree. Far too many people think Medicaid and Medicare are free, which they are not, and cannot be abused for multiple simple complaints. While the uninsured may wait too long to see a provider and their problem is far gone, the present Medicaid or the present system allows people to run to the ER or their primary care provider for relatively minor problems if they are a Medicaid recipient, less commonly with the older Medicare recipient. I believe your listeners need to know that reality and understand the buzzwords wellness and prevention in order for a government subsidized system to work. Well, I agree with part of this. Wellness and prevention, oh, sure. Sure. The insurance plan that I have through my union provides pretty good coverage for what is considered wellness. What do we call it? Well baby section. That covers all of Molly's vaccinations, has covered everything. Annual checkups. We, Kathy and I, certainly believe in prevention for our four-year-old. I also try to, pass that on to my children who have children, my daughters who have kids, you know, how important it is, you know, the checkups, the intervention, the prevention. But there's something in this email. I'm not sure how the writer meant it, but when he or she says, while the present system allows people to run to the ER for relatively minor problems. No, it doesn't allow people. It forces people. Who wants to go sit in an emergency room with a kid with a fever? You don't have the money to go to a pediatrician, much less a general practitioner. So what are you left with? You've got a kid with a fever. 99% of the time, it's a relatively minor situation. It's just the body fighting off an infection. It's over. But you don't know that. You're a parent. Obviously, things are not going real well for you. If you don't have insurance on your children, you may say, well, that's an irresponsible a parent. Is it? Or is it a parent that's just trying to survive in the present system, in the current system? So, regardless of why, the parent has a sick child, doesn't know what to do, doesn't have a doctor. Why? No money. No health insurance. So you wind up in an emergency room. You don't go there. You know, the system doesn't allow people. It forces people to go to the emergency room. That's what George Bush said. What do you mean? We already have free care. Go to the emergency room. It's crazy. What parent, unless absolutely, utterly forced, is going to go to an emergency room knowing that it's going to be 6, 7, 8, 10 hours and you're sitting there with a sick child? No. I'm sorry. You know a lot more about it than I do because you're a nurse practitioner. That's fine. But I think you are wrong here. And who thinks Medicaid and Medicare are free? Who thinks that? In the first place, the people I've known who have been on Medicaid, to some degree, are ashamed of it. Because aside from the fact that it's a desperation, a last, I'm talking about younger people. The various forms of Medicaid here in Georgia is called Peach Care, you know, for children. They're ashamed that the quality of medical care that comes with these Medicaid programs is really bad, not because the practitioners are bad, but because the system is bad. Because the system demands that you be absolutely destitute before you can qualify. Peach Care and these other programs kick in. It's for the working poor. What a phrase, huh? Working poor. Jesus, God. It's for the working poor. People are making, I think in Georgia, a family of four can make up to, what, $40,000, $45,000 a year and still qualify. And these right-wing sons of bitches say, $45,000 a year? Yeah, $45,000 a year. Oh, my goodness. So people who have to submit to Medicaid in all its varied forms, the element of shame, the element of crappy of service that goes with it. So many doctors, obviously doctors don't take Medicaid. There are very few doctors that will take Medicaid. Bless their hearts, the ones that do. Medicare is getting to be the same way. So I don't think people see Medicaid and Medicare as being free. In the first place, you can't get Medicare unless you pay a premium for it. Right? Unless it's part, what is it, the hospitalization part, Kathy, that's free, the catastrophic, but is that part A? But part B? That's not free. As far as Medicaid is concerned, if there are no co-pays, even for the Medicaid user, there is the agony, there is a price to be paid. So no, I'm sorry. And who's to say? You're a nurse practitioner. Once you do a workup and can diagnose something, you can tell whether or not it's a minor or major problem. But a fever, a child with a high fever, that could be meningitis, couldn't it? Or it could be strep throat. Or it could be nothing, just a fever. And you're expecting people to make that decision. You're saying that they run to the ER with relatively minor problems if they're a Medicaid recipient. How do they know it's a minor problem until they've been examined? Sorry, I don't like your email. I really don't. I'm gonna find some faith.
Flying Monkey Right Blues, here's the cure, Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. News update here from bradblog.com. Brad Friedman, who is one of the most active investigators for voting fraud in this country. We're fortunate enough, occasionally he'll fill in for us when we're gone, but that's not what he does. What he does is fraud investigation, voting fraud investigation, and exposés at his website. And now, apparently, it is, he writes, it's happening in Texas and Missouri, if you read to the end of this article. And where are the thousands of attorneys from the Obama campaign and the Democratic National Committee that were supposed to leap on this? Huh? Brad writes, with every incident so far reported of touchscreen vote flipping during early voting in this year's general election, from county to county in West Virginia, Nashville, Tennessee, Texas, Missouri, it's been the ESNS Votronic touchscreen machine that has failed, flipping votes from one candidate to another, not chosen by the voter. And, of course, it's the flipping is from Democratic to Republican. Gee, there's a surprise, or a different party, but it's away from the Democrats. These are the same machines that lost 18,000 votes in the Democratic-leaning Sarasota County in the 2006 U.S. House race for Catherine Harris's old seat. And he goes on, the latest reports of ESNS vote flipping come from Palo Pinto County, Texas, where two voters, one of them an alternate election judge and office manager of the Palo Pinto County Democratic headquarters, saw straight ticket Democratic votes flipped to straight ticket Republican votes. Two times for the first person, three times for the alternate election judge who was just trying to vote. And it goes on. Go to Brad Friedman, the Brad blog, bradblog.com, and you'll get the whole story. But, you know, here we go again. There's already a scenario being written to explain a McCain-Palin win. And it's fake and phony, but it will come about if we the people allow these Nazi son of a bitches to steal another one. You know, this ESNS and Diebold, and there's another one. These people truly ought to be damaged. They really should. They are involved in destroying the country. What would happen if we caught people in the United States who were planning to blow up Hoover Dam, for example? You know, we caught them setting charges. What would happen if we caught people who were trying to start fires in Redwoods National Forest? What would happen to people like this? They would be severely punished. And if anyone were hurt in the process, depending on what state they were in, they could face a death penalty. Why is that any different from people who are trying to bring down the United States this way through voting manipulation and voting fraud? Now, this is not, this is piercing through the smokescreen of the Acorn non-story set up by these unconscionable bastards. I'll tell you, I can see no reason to allow conservatives to continue to breathe. Can you? Especially these sort. I don't know where these people come from. Are they operatives from Russia? Are they operatives from some hideous country somewhere in Middle Asia that have been hired by the Republicans to come over here and commit this kind of crime against our system? Are they just Americans who have decided that they hate this country so much they're going to destroy it this way internally? You know, I don't know if it's an external threat anymore, an internal threat, but if these people are discovered, why are not the manufacturers or the code writers for ESS hauled out into the streets and beaten thoroughly and then thrown in jail and then tried for treason of a sort? Isn't this treason? Why do we sit back on our asses and let this continue. These people are destroying our country, our system of government. As flawed as the Bush crime family has made it, it's because we don't goddamn do anything. We don't do anything. Why not? Why don't we do something? Why don't we find ES&S voting machines and smash them on the goddamn street? I mean, there are Catholic nuns in this country who will go try to smash a nuclear missile. And we won't even attack voting machines that are undermining and destroying our country? What in the hell has happened to us?
What you gonna do when the silence calls your name? Make your speeches to the wind, count the votes, then laugh in. What you gonna do when the silence falls? See that cloud in the eastern sky. See that cloud.
It's time for your humble and obedient servant, more of Mike Malone.
Twenty-five before the hour. Okay, yeah, it's election fraud. Not vote fraud. Yeah, I guess I should be clear on that when I'm not screaming. But that just... It infuriates me. Why are people recruited into the military? It's to defend the American way of life. That's the lie. It's defend corporate America's way of life. But let's stipulate that it is a lie, but that's the reason people are recruited in the military. Honor, duty, country. Defend the American way of life. And take an oath to defend the Constitution when you're sworn in. And part of defending the American way of life in the mythology is to defend the right to vote that women got in 1920. And African Americans have only been allowed, although they had the vote earlier, they've only been allowed to vote since the mid-60s. So, and white America, white males, have had the vote, like, you know, forever. So along comes this herd of political operatives, all Republicans. You don't find a Democrat that is trying to destroy the voting franchise. They're all Republicans, every last one of these verminous sons of bitches. And here they are trying to undermine the basic premise. Whether it works here or not is beside the point. The basic premise of a free people, the right to choose their leaders, the right to choose their leaders. Now, let's stipulate something else. Of course, that has become a fantasy. We do not choose our leaders, for the most part. In some instances, we may. But even if we stipulate the fantasy, should we do nothing while companies like ES&S or Diebold are allowed to continue to destroy what so many people have died thinking they were protecting? And I'm talking again about the military. How many millions of American soldiers have died believing they were supporting, among other things, the right of a free people to choose its leaders, when in fact they were dying for corporations to have the right to exploit the rest of the world? That is a sad fact, and it's a sad reality, and that's a criminal act in itself, but that's a different discussion. So here we are. We now have operating on the essential level of the United States, the essential level, choosing our own leaders who are screwing the system into the ground, stealing everything, and making us insane in the process. We know when a Democrat has won a national election, and because we have been so conditioned to shut up and take it, when the U.S. Supreme Court rules, okay, time to stop the vote counting, we're going to give it to Bush. We sit back on our asses 8 years ago and did nothing, nothing. In less civilized countries, when that happens, you have 30, 40% of the population show up at the parliament building that afternoon with goddamn guns and bombs and hand grenades saying, what? No, 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 no. Don't think so. But what do? Nothing. And then 4 years later, they do it again. And all the proof is out there. It's all been investigated. Brad Friedman, Greg Palast, Bobby Kennedy Jr., the list goes on and on, Michael Moore, people who are trying their damnedest to say, don't you see what's going on? And what do? Turn away. We don't look. No. Don't want to see that. We don't want to see it. You know why? Because if we really understood what is going on, we would take up arms and resist. But we don't want to do that. No. Can't do that. No. Can't do that. So if they're going to steal it, oh, what the hell? They're all the same. Oh, it doesn't make any difference. It all comes out in the wash. It doesn't matter. Doesn't it? Huh? So here we are. What are we going to do if it happens this time? The last four elections, 2000, 2002, 2004, 2006, have all been severely tampered with by Republicans. Republicans. These people who are to the Republican Party as the current crop of fundamental Christians are to the teachings of Christ. In other words, phony bastards who are out to destroy either Christianity or our system of government. And what do? Nothing. Why is that? What is it about us, you and me, that we are witnessing the destruction of our system of choosing leaders and we don't do anything? What is that? Is that cowardice? Is that inertia? Is that ennui and angst and all those nice little words that don't mean a damn thing? Why do we not react? We would react if a bunch of foreign-speaking people broke into our voting precincts and stole all our ballots. What would we do when we caught them? What would we do? Jail them, try them, convict them, and then send them to prison. What do we do when Republicans are doing it right in front of us? Nothing. Not a goddamn thing. Nothing. So here we are again. 2000, 2002, 2004, 2006. Here comes 2008. What are we going to do this time? Now, I said it the other night about, you know, one of these little pasty-faced sons of bitches who would come up and challenge me if I cast a vote someplace, and some Republican wants to challenge my identity or my right to vote, that person is going to be severely injured or worse. Or I am. And what are we going to do this time as Diebold and ESNS continues to undermine and destroy representative democracy? What are we going to do? Nothing. And why is that? You know, we're so willing, some of us, to send our sons and our daughters into the military to go off someplace and follow the lie that they are defending the American way of life, democracy, mom and apple pie. I guess they don't say mom and apple pie anymore. Don't need to. Democracy, American way of life. No, they're not. No, they're not, if back here at home, ESNS and Diebold are destroying the way we choose our leaders. So here it is, happening again. Only this time, we don't have to wait until after the election. The evidence is there now. People are speaking. Well, you know, I wanted to vote straight Republican or Democrat, and it flipped to Republican. Look, I punched in the Democratic candidate, and it flipped it to the Republican candidate. What am I supposed to do?
Oh, well, here, fill in a provisional ballot. We'll talk about it later.
Well, here, let me try again. And you try again. And what happens when the third time? You take out a hammer and smash the machine into little pieces and gears and whatever the hell is in there. Isn't that what Catholic nuns do to missiles that are designed to go somewhere and kill lots of people? 65, 70-year-old nuns go to prison for a couple of years? And what do you and I do? Nothing! Why not? You know, we're talking about the essential element of this country. Enfranchisement. To vote. To pick our own leaders. Even if it is a scam and a myth. Now they've taken the scam and the myth away from us. And what do we do about it? Nothing.
Song that I can sing in my own company. I never thought you were a fool, but darling, look at you. Oh, you gotta stand up straight, carry your own weight. These tears are going nowhere, baby.
Something happening here, what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
It's about 10 before the hour. Monica writes in, all right, so what do we do? Mike, please don't say write a letter to our members of Congress. If I hear that pathetic line once more, I'm going to have to get a prescription to lower my blood pressure. Please tell us what it is that this country needs to do. I never recommend writing letters to Congress, to your member of Congress. I really don't. That, in the first place, they're not going to open the letter because it might have anthrax spores in it. As far as email, unless there's like 150,000 emails, that it's totally ignored. Telegrams, I don't know. They still have telegrams. I don't advocate that at all. Maybe when your member of Congress comes back to the home district for one of those little look what I've done for you sessions, you can get some words in. So, Mike, please tell us what it is this country needs to do. this is what I believe. I remember during the 2000, the attempt before December 8th to recount votes in 2000 at Palm Beach County, when all of a sudden this huge crowd of white people, mostly males, showed up. And you remember the videos, they're pounding on the doors of the Palm Beach County Registrar of the office where they're trying to count votes. They're pounding on the doors. What do they call it? The Gucci riot or something. Turned out that all these people were Republican staffers from D.C. who were sent down there to create a riot. When I saw that on television, like most people, I just sat there dumbfounded. This is not happening in my country. These are brown shirts. This is some kind of a play on what happened in Germany in the 20s and 30s. But it wasn't. And look what we got. So, what do I believe? I believe that you have to meet violence with violence. I am not a pacifist. I'm anti-war. But I'm not a pacifist. If something like that happened this time here in Georgia, where there was a question of voter fraud, and an honest attempt was being made by people to really find out what happened, count the votes, and a group of thugs like that showed up, I would go down, and I would borrow something from this old white racist governor we used to have here, Lester Maddox. I would take an axe handle with me, even though by Georgia law I'm allowed to carry my gun and go down. I can carry my gun anywhere except out to Hartsfield-Jackson Airport. But I don't want to do that because, for obvious reasons. So I would take an axe handle and I would go down to where people were demonstrating and beating on doors and threatening vote counters, and I would start swinging. That's all. I mean, I'm sorry. That's who I goddamn am at this point. I don't want it to go to court. I don't want to sit down and argue with ESNS or Diebold about their proprietary information about how the programs are run. I want to break somebody's ass. I want to take an axe handle and aim for their knees, and if I missed and hit them in the groin, too bad. Get the hell out of the way of my essential right as an American citizen. Get out of my way, or I will beat you. So there you go, Monica. That's the best answer I've got. Write a letter to a member of Congress? Hell no. Hell no. The next time you see a bunch of white thugs on your TV screen trying to interfere, take your goddamn axe handle and go down and make it right. Oh, you might serve 30 days in jail for disorderly conduct or assault. But think about the Catholic nuns who go to prison for 3 goddamn years for trying to interfere with weapons of mass destruction. And who cares? Nobody. So at some point, if these punk asses who are trying to destroy our country, if they persist and won't stop, then you got to meet force with force or violence with violence. Call it whatever you want. At this point, you know, I really don't care anymore. I don't care how it's defined as long as it's effective. In this particular instance, come into my precinct and come over here and start tampering or challenging me, and you're going to get kneecapped very quickly, and I'm willing to do the time in jail. I'll do my goddamn program from a jail cell if I have to. I've had enough of this. You little squeegee bastards, you Republicans, you so-called conservatives, you religious nuts, with your whininess and, oh, you're picking on me. I'm just doing God's will or the Republican Party's will. Okay, that's fine. I'm only doing Mike Malloy's will. That's all I've got. Oh, what a hell of a way to end the program. Thanks to Ian Huff, Ben Burt, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and Catherine Bay for their efforts tonight and all week. I'm just tired of this. You know, for the past 16 years, it's just been 18 years, it's been without let up. from these right-wingers? And what if we Democrats or liberals or pacifists or anti-war people or people who just want to live our lives and do it properly? What have we done? We haven't reacted. I'm ready to react. Are you ready to react? You know, I get these emails from these punk asses who say nasty things about me and my wife and my kid, and they're cowards. They're cowards, every one of them. I can be found so easy on Google Earth. If just one of you would show up, it would just make my day, my week, my life. I've just reached the end of my rope with this. I really have. I really, really have.
If you do show up, will you call first? Because I may be out of Super Beans coffee, and, you know, I'd like to shuffle Molly off to a play date.
Have a good weekend. I'll see you Monday. Take care. Keep it lit, okay? Oh, and have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.